There are a whole lot of things in this world of ours that you haven't started wondering about yet. Where, for example, do you think that I keep my ears? Your ears? Why, in your head, of course. Everyone burst out laughing.
You mean you don't even know that?
Cried the centipede. Try again, said the old green grasshopper, smiling at James. You can't possibly keep them anywhere else.
Oh, can't I?
Well, I give up. Where do you keep them?
Right here, the old green grasshopper said. One on each side of my tummy.
It's not true.
Of course it's true.
What's so peculiar about that?
You ought to see where my cousins the crickets and the katydids keep theirs.
Where do they keep them?
In their legs. One in each front leg, just below the knee.
You mean you didn't know that either?
The centipede said scornfully. You're joking, James said. Nobody could possibly have his ears in his legs.
Why not?
Because it's ridiculous, that's why.
You know what I think is ridiculous?
The centipede said, grinning away as usual.
I don't mean to be rude, but I think it is ridiculous to have ears on the sides of one's head. It certainly looks ridiculous. You ought to take a peek in the mirror some day and see for yourself.
Pest, cried the earthworm. Why must you always be so rude and rambunctious to everyone? You ought to apologize to James at once.
25. James didn't want the earthworm and the centipede to get into another argument, so he said quickly to the earthworm, Tell me, do you play any kind of music?
No, but I do other things, some of which are really quite extraordinary,
the earthworm said, brightening. Such as what? Asked James.
Well, the earthworm said, next time you stand in a field or in a garden and look around you, then just remember this, that every grain of soil upon the surface of the land, every tiny little bit of soil that you can see, has actually passed through the body of an earthworm during the last few years. Isn't that wonderful?
It's not possible, said James.
My dear boy, it's a fact.
You mean you actually swallow soil?
Like mad,
the earthworm said proudly.
In one end and out the other.
But what's the point?
What do you mean, what's the point?
Why do you do it?
We do it for the farmers. It makes the soil nice and light and crumbly, so that things will grow well in it. If you really want to know, the farmers couldn't do without us. We are essential. We are vital. So it is only natural that the farmer should love us. He loves us even more, I believe, than he loves the ladybird.
The ladybird, said James, turning to look at her. Do they love you, too?
I am told that they do,
the ladybird answered modestly, blushing all over.
In fact, I understand that in some places the farmers love us so much that they go out and buy live ladybirds by the sackful and take them home and set them free in their fields. They are very pleased when they have lots of ladybirds in their fields.
But why? James asked.
Because we gobble up all the nasty little insects that are gobbling up all the farmers' crops. It helps enormously, and we ourselves don't charge a penny for our services.
I think you're wonderful, James told her.
Can I ask you one special question?
Please do.
Well, is it really true that I can tell how old a ladybird is by counting her spots?
Oh, no, that's just a children's story, the ladybird said.
We never change our spots. Some of us, of course, are born with more spots than others, but we never change them. The number of spots that a ladybird has is simply a way of showing which branch of the family she belongs to. I, for example, as you can see for yourself, am a 9-spotted ladybird. I am very lucky. It is a fine thing to be.
It is indeed, said James, gazing at the beautiful scarlet shell with the 9 black spots on it.
On the other hand, the ladybird went on, some of my less fortunate relatives have no more than 2 spots altogether on their shells. Can you imagine that? They are called 2-spotted ladybirds, and very common and ill-mannered they are, I regret to say. And then, of course, you have the 5-spotted ladybirds as well. They are much nicer than the 2-spotted ones, although I myself find them a trifle too saucy for my taste.
But they are all of them loved, said James.
Yes, the ladybird answered quietly. They are all of them loved.
It seems that almost everyone round here is loved, said James.
How nice this is.
Not me,
cried the centipede happily.
I am a pest, and I'm proud of it. Ho-ho! I am such a shocking, dreadful pest!
Hear, hear,
the earthworm said.
But what about you, Miss Spider? Asked James. Aren't you all so much loved in the world?
Alas, no,
Miss Spider answered, sighing long and loud.
I am not loved at all. And yet I do nothing but good. All day long I catch flies and mosquitoes in my webs. I am a decent person.
I know you are, said James.
It is very unfair the way we spiders are treated,
Miss Spider went on.
Why, only last week your own horrible aunt Sponge flushed my poor dear father down the plug hole in the bathtub.
How awful, cried James.
I watched the whole thing from a corner up in the ceiling,
Miss Spider murmured.
It was ghastly. We never saw him again.
A large tear rolled down her cheek and fell with a splash on the floor.
But is it not very unlucky to kill a spider?
James inquired, looking around at the others.
Course it's unlucky to kill a spider,
shouted the centipede.
It's about the unluckiest thing anyone can do. Look what happened to Aunt Sponge after she'd done that. Bump!
We all felt it, didn't we, as the peach went over her?
Ho-ho! What a lovely bump that must have been for you, Miss Spider.
It was very satisfactory, Miss Spider answered.
Will you sing us a song about it, please?
So the centipede did.
Aunt Sponge was terrifically fat and tremendously flabby at that. Her tummy and waist were as soggy as paste. It was worse on the place where she sat. So she said, I must make myself flat. I must make myself sleek as a cat. I shall do without dinner to make myself thinner. But along came the peach, oh, the beautiful peach, and made her far thinner than that.
That was very nice, Miss Spider said. Now sing one about Aunt Spiker.
With pleasure, the centipede answered, grinning.
Aunt Spiker was thin as a wire, and dry as a bone, only drier. She was so long and thin, if you carried her in, you could use her for poking the fire. I must do something quickly, she frowned. I want fat, I want pan upon pan. I must eat lots and lots of marshmallows and chocks till I start bulging out all round. Oh, yes, she announced, I have sworn, that I'll alter my figure by dawn, cried the peach with a snigger. I'll alter your figure, and ironed her out on the lawn.
Everybody clapped and called out for more songs from the centipede, who at once launched into his favourite song of all.
once upon a time, when pigs were swine, and monkeys chewed tobacco, and hens took snuff to make themselves tough, and the ducks said quack, quack, quacko, and porcupines drank fiery wines, and goats ate tapioca, and old Mother Hubbard got stuck in the... Look out, centipede!
Cried James.
Look out!
26. The centipede, who had begun dancing wildly round the deck during this song, had suddenly gone too close to the downward curving edge of the peach, and for 3 awful seconds he had stood teetering on the brink, swinging his legs frantically in circles in an effort to stop himself from falling over backward into space. But before anyone could reach him, down he went. He gave a shriek of terror as he fell, and the others, rushing to the side and peering over, saw his poor long body tumbling over and over through the air, getting smaller and smaller until it was out of sight.
Silkworm! Yelled James. Quick! Start spinning!
The silkworm sighed, for she was still very tired from spinning all that silk for the seagulls, but she did as she was told.
I'm going down after him!
Cried James, grabbing the silk string as it started coming out of the silkworm and tying the end of it around his waist.
The rest of you hold on to Silkworm so I don't pull her over with me. And later on, if you feel 3 tugs on the string, start hauling me up again.
He jumped, and he went tumbling down after the centipede, down, down, down towards the sea below. And you can imagine how quickly the silkworm had to spin to keep up with the speed of his fall.
"We'll never see either of them again," cried the ladybird. "Oh, dear! Oh, dear! Just when we were all so happy, too!"
Miss Spider, the glowworm, and the ladybird all began to cry. So did the earthworm.
"I don't care a bit about the centipede,"
the earthworm sobbed.
"But I really did love that little boy."
Very softly, the old green grasshopper started to play the funeral march on his violin, and by the time he had finished, everyone, including himself, was in a flood of tears. Suddenly, there came 3 sharp tugs on the rope.
"Pull!" shouted the old green grasshopper. "Everyone, get behind me and pull!"
There was about 1 mile of string to be hauled in, but they all worked like mad. And in the end, over the side of the peach, there appeared a dripping wet James with a dripping wet centipede clinging to him tightly, with all 42 of his legs.
"He saved me,"
gasped the centipede.
"He swam around in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean until he found me."
"My dear boy," the old green grasshopper said, patting James on the back, "I do congratulate you."
"My boots,"
cried the centipede.
"Just look at my precious boots. They're ruined by the water."
"Be quiet,"
the earthworm said.
"You are lucky to be alive."
"Are we still going up and up?" asked James.
"We certainly are," answered the old green grasshopper. "And it's beginning to get dark." "I know. It'll soon be night."
"Why don't we all go down below and keep warm until tomorrow morning?"
Miss Spider suggested.
"No," the old green grasshopper said. "I think that would be very unwise. It will be safer if we all stay up here through the night and keep watch. Then, if anything happens, we shall anyway be ready for it."
27. James Henry Trotter and his companions crouched close together on top of the peach as the night began closing in around them. Clouds like mountains towered high above their heads on all sides, mysterious, menacing, overwhelming. Gradually, it grew darker and darker, and then a pale 3/4 moon came up over the tops of the clouds and cast an eerie light over the whole scene.
The giant peach swayed gently from side to side as it floated along, and the hundreds of silky white strings going upward from its stem were beautiful in the moonlight. So also was the great flock of seagulls overhead. There was not a sound anywhere. Travelling upon the peach was not in the least like travelling in an aeroplane. The aeroplane comes clattering and roaring through the sky, and whatever might be lurking secretly up there in the great cloud mountains goes running for cover at its approach. That is why people who travel in aeroplanes never see anything. But the peach, ah yes, the peach was a soft, stealthy traveller, making no noise at all as it floated along. And several times during that long, silent night ride, high up over the middle of the ocean in the moonlight, James and his friends saw things that no one had ever seen before. Once, as they drifted silently past a massive white cloud, they saw on the top of it a group of strange, tall, wispy-looking things that were about twice the height of ordinary men. They were not easy to see at first, because they were almost as white as the cloud itself. But as the peach sailed closer, it became obvious that these things were actually living creatures. Tall, wispy, wraith-like, shadowy, white creatures, who looked as though they were made out of a mixture of cotton wool and candy floss, and thin white hairs.
"Ooh," the ladybird said. "I don't like this at all."
"Shh," James whispered back.
"Don't let them hear you. They must be cloud men."
"Cloud men," they murmured, huddling closer together for comfort.
"Oh dear, oh dear."
"I'm glad I'm blind and can't see them," the earthworm said, "or I would probably scream."
"I hope they don't turn round and see us,"
Miss Spider stammered.
"Do you think they would eat us?"
the earthworm asked.
"They would eat you,"
the centipede answered, grinning.
"They'd cut you up like a salami and eat you in thin slices."
The poor earthworm began to quiver all over with fright.
"But what are they doing?"
the old green grasshopper whispered.
"I don't know," James answered softly. "Let's watch and see."
The cloud men were all standing in a group, and they were doing something peculiar with their hands. First, they would reach out, all of them at once, and grab handfuls of cloud. Then they would roll these handfuls of cloud in their fingers until they turned into what looked like large white marbles. Then they would toss the marbles to one side and quickly grab more bits of cloud and start over again. It was all very silent and mysterious. The pile of marbles beside them kept growing larger and larger. Soon there was a truckload of them there at least.
"I must be absolutely mad," the centipede said.
"There's nothing to be afraid of here."
"Be quiet, you pest," the earthworm whispered. "We shall all be eaten if they see us."
But the cloud men were much too busy with what they were doing to have noticed the great peach floating silently up behind them. Then the watchers on the peach saw one of the cloud men raising his long wispy arms above his head, and they heard him shouting,
"All right, boys, that's enough. Get the shovels."
And all the other cloud men immediately let out a strange, high-pitched whoop of joy and started jumping up and down and waving their arms in the air. Then they picked up enormous shovels and rushed over to the pile of marbles and began shoveling them as fast as they could over the side of the cloud into space.
"Down they go,"
they chanted as they worked.
"Down they go, hail and snow, freezes and sneezes and noses will blow."
"It's hailstones," whispered James excitedly.
They've been making hailstones, and now they're showering them down onto the people in the world below.
Hailstones? The centipede said. That's ridiculous. This is summertime. You don't have hailstones in summertime.
They're practicing for the winter,
James told him.
I don't believe it,
shouted the centipede, raising his voice.
Shh, the others whispered, and James said softly, For heaven's sake, centipede, don't make so much noise.
The centipede roared with laughter.
Those imbeciles couldn't hear anything, he cried. They're deaf as doorknobs. You watch.
And before anyone could stop him, he had cupped his front feet to his mouth and was yelling at the cloud men as loud as he could.
Idiots!
He yelled.
Nincompoops! Half-wits! Blunderheads! Asses! What earth do you think you're doing over there?
The effect was immediate. The cloud men jumped round as if they had been stung by wasps, and when they saw the great golden peach floating past them not 50 yards away in the sky, they gave a yelp of surprise and dropped their shovels to the ground. And there they stood, with the moonlight streaming down all over them, absolutely motionless, like a group of tall, white, hairy statues, staring and staring at the gigantic fruit as it went sailing by. The passengers on the peach, all except the centipede, sat frozen with terror, looking back at the cloud men and wondering what was going to happen next.
Now you've done it, you loathsome pest,
whispered the earthworm to the centipede.
I'm not frightened of them,
shouted the centipede. And to show everybody once again that he wasn't, he stood up to his full height and started dancing about and making insulting signs at the cloud men with all 42 of his legs. This evidently infuriated the cloud men beyond belief. All at once, they spun round and grabbed great handfuls of hailstones and rushed to the edge of the cloud and started throwing them at the peach, shrieking with fury all the time.
Look out!
Cried James.
Quick, lie down! Lie flat on the deck!
It was lucky they did. A large hailstone can hurt you as much as a rock or a lump of lead if it's thrown hard enough. And my goodness, how those cloud men could throw. The hailstones came whizzing through the air like bullets from a machine gun, and James could hear them smashing against the sides of the peach and burying themselves in the peach flesh with horrible squelching noises.
Plop, 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 plop,
and then ping, 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 as they bounced off the poor ladybird's shell, because she couldn't lie as flat as the others. And then crack, as one of them hit the centipede right on the nose, and crack again, as another one hit him somewhere else.
Ow!
He cried.
Ow! Stop! Stop! Stop!
But the cloud men had no intention of stopping. James could see them rushing about on the cloud like a lot of huge hairy ghosts, picking up hailstones from the pile, dashing to the edge of the cloud, hurling hailstones at the peach, dashing back again to get more, and then, when the pile of stones was all gone, they simply grabbed handfuls of cloud and made as many more as they wanted, and much bigger ones now, some of them as large as cannonballs.
Quickly!
Cried James.
Down the tunnel, or we'll all be wiped out!
There was a rush for the tunnel entrance, and half a minute later, everybody was safely downstairs, inside the stone of the peach, trembling with fright and listening to the noise of the hailstones as they came crashing against the side of the peach.
I'm a wreck,
groaned the centipede.
I'm wounded all over.
It serves you right,
said the earthworm.
Would somebody kindly look and see if my shell is cracked, the ladybird said.
Give us some light,
shouted the old green grasshopper.
I can't,
wailed the glowworm.
They've broken my bulb.
Then put in another one,
the centipede said.
Be quiet a moment, said James. Listen, I do believe they're not hitting us anymore.
They all stopped talking and listened. Yes, the noise had ceased. The hailstones were no longer smashing against the peach.
We've left them behind. The seagulls must have pulled us away out of danger.
Hooray! Let's go up and see!
Cautiously, with James going first, they all climbed back up the tunnel. James poked his head out and looked around.
It's all clear, he called. I can't see them anywhere.
28. One by one, the travellers came out again onto the top of the peach and gazed carefully around. The moon was still shining as brightly as ever, and there were still plenty of huge, shimmering cloud mountains on all sides. But there were no cloud men in sight now.
The peach is leaking!
Shouted the old green grasshopper, peering over the side.
It's full of holes, and the juice is dripping out everywhere!
That does it, cried the earthworm. If the peach is leaking, then we shall surely sink.
Don't be an ass,
the centipede told him.
We're not in the water now.
Oh, look, shouted the ladybird. Look, 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 over there.
Everybody swung round to look. In the distance, and directly ahead of them, they now saw a most extraordinary sight. It was a kind of arch, a colossal, curvy-shaped thing that reached high up into the sky and came down again at both ends. The ends were resting on a huge flat cloud that was as big as a desert.
Now what in the world is that? Asked James.
It's a bridge!
It's an enormous hoop cut in half.
With a giant horseshoe standing upside down.
Stop me if I'm wrong, murmured the centipede, going white in the face. But might those not be cloud men climbing all over it?
There was a dreadful silence. The peach floated closer and closer.
They are cloud men.
There are hundreds of them.
Thousands, millions.
I don't want to hear about it,
shrieked the poor blind earthworm.
I'd rather be on the end of a fish hook and used as bait than come up against those terrible creatures again.
I'd rather be fried alive and eaten by a Mexican,
wailed the old green grasshopper.
Please keep quiet, whispered James. It's our only hope. They crouched very still on top of the peach, staring at the cloud men. The whole surface of the cloud was literally swarming with them. And there were hundreds more up above, climbing about on that monstrous, crazy arch.
But what is that thing? Whispered the ladybird. And what are they doing to it?
I don't care what they're doing to it,
the centipede said, scuttling over to the tunnel entrance.
I'm not staying up here. Goodbye.
But the rest of them were too frightened, or too hypnotized by the whole affair, to make a move.
Do you know what? James whispered.
What?
They said.
What?
That enormous arch. They seem to be painting it. They've got pots of paint and big brushes. You look.
And he was quite right. The travellers were close enough now to see that this was exactly what the cloud men were doing. They all had huge brushes in their hands, and they were splashing the paint onto the great curvy arch in a frenzy of speed, so fast, in fact, that in a few minutes the whole of the arch became covered with the most glorious colours, reds, blues, greens, yellows and purples.
It's a rainbow,
everyone said at once.
They're making a rainbow.
Oh, isn't it beautiful? Just look at those colours!
Centipede,
they shouted,
you must come up and see this.
They were so enthralled by the beauty and brilliance of the rainbow that they forgot to keep their voices low any longer. The centipede poked his head cautiously out of the tunnel entrance.
Well, 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 he said.
I've always wondered how those things were made. But why all the ropes? What are they doing with those ropes?
Good heavens. They're pushing it off the cloud, cried James.
There it goes. They're lowering it down to the earth with ropes.
And I'll tell you something else, the centipede said sharply. If I'm not greatly mistaken, we ourselves are going to bump right into it.
Bless my soul, he's right,
the old green grasshopper exclaimed. The rainbow was now dangling in the air below the cloud. The peach was also just below the level of the cloud, and it was heading directly towards the rainbow, travelling rather fast.
"We are lost!"
Miss Spider cried, wringing her feet again.
"The end has come!"
"I can't stand it," wailed the earthworm. "Tell me what's happening."
"We're going to miss it,"
shouted the ladybird.
"No, we're not."
"Yes, we are."
"Yes, yes, no. Oh, my heavens."
"Hold on, everybody,"
James called out. And suddenly there was a tremendous thud as the peach went crashing into the top of the rainbow. This was followed by an awful splintering noise as the enormous rainbow snapped right across the middle and became two separate pieces. The next thing that happened was extremely unfortunate. The ropes that the cloud men had been using for lowering the rainbow got tangled up with the silk strings that went up from the peach to the seagulls. The peach was trapped. Panic and pandemonium broke out among the travellers, and James Henry Trotter, glancing up quickly, saw the faces of 1,000 furious cloud men peering down at him over the edge of the cloud. The faces had almost no shape at all because of the long white hairs that covered them. There were no noses, no mouths, no ears, no chins. Only the eyes were visible in each face. Two small black eyes glinting malevolently through the hairs. Then came the most frightening thing of all. One cloud man, a huge, hairy creature, who must have been 14 feet tall at least, suddenly stood up and made a tremendous leap off the side of the cloud, trying to get to one of the silk strings above the peach. James and his friends saw him go flying through the air above them, his arms outstretched in front of him, reaching for the nearest string, and they saw him grab it and cling to it with his hands and legs. And then, very, very slowly, hand over hand, he began to come down the string.
"Mercy! Help! Save us!" cried the ladybird.
"He's coming down to eat us!" wailed the old green grasshopper.
"Jump overboard! Then eat the earthworm first!"
shouted the centipede.
"It's no good eating me! I'm full of bones like a kipper!"
"Centipede!" yelled James. "Quickly! Bite through that string, the one he's coming down on!"
The centipede rushed over to the stem of the peach and took the silk string in his teeth and bit it through with one snap of his jaws. Immediately, far above them, a single seagull was seen to come away from the rest of the flock and go flying off with a long string trailing from its neck. And clinging desperately to the end of the string, shouting and cursing with fury, was the huge, hairy cloud man. Up and up he went, swinging across the moonlit sky. And James Henry Trotter, watching him with delight, said, "My goodness, he must weigh almost nothing at all for one seagull to be able to pull him up like that. He must be all hair and air." The rest of the cloud men were so flabbergasted at seeing one of their company carried away in this manner that they let go the ropes they were holding, and then, of course, down went the rainbow, both halves of it together, tumbling towards the earth below. This freed the peach, which at once began sailing away from that terrible cloud. But the travellers were not in the clear yet. The infuriated cloud men jumped up and ran after them along the cloud, pelting them mercilessly with all sorts of hard and horrible objects. Empty paint buckets, paint brushes, step ladders, stools, saucepans, frying pans, rotten eggs, dead rats, bottles of hair oil, anything those brutes could lay their hands on came raining down upon the peach. One cloud man, taking very careful aim, tipped a gallon of thick purple paint over the edge of the cloud, right onto the centipede himself. The centipede screamed with anger.
My legs! He cried. They're all sticking together. I can't walk. And my eyelids won't open. I can't see. And my boots. My boots are ruined.
But for the moment, everyone was far too busy dodging the things that the cloud men were throwing to pay any attention to the centipede.
The paint is drying, he moaned. It's going hard. I can't move my legs. I can't move anything.
You can still move your mouth, the earthworm said, and that is a great pity.
James,
bawled the centipede.
Please help me. Wash off this paint. Scrape it off. Anything.
29. It seemed like a long time before the seagulls were able to pull the peach away from that horrible rainbow cloud. But they managed it at last, and then everybody gathered round the wretched centipede and began arguing about the best way to get the paint off his body. He really did look a sight. He was purple all over. And now that the paint was beginning to dry and harden, he was forced to sit very stiff and upright, as though he were encased in cement. And all 42 of his legs were sticking out straight in front of him, like rods. He tried to say something, but his lips wouldn't move. All he could do now was to make gurgling noises in his throat. The old green grasshopper reached out and touched him carefully on the stomach. But how could it possibly have dried so quickly? He asked. It's rainbow paint, James answered. Rainbow paint dries very quick and very hard.
I detest paint, Miss Spider announced. It frightens me. It reminds me of Aunt Spiker. The late Aunt Spiker, I mean. Because the last time she painted her kitchen ceiling, my poor darling grandmother stepped into it by mistake when it was still wet, and there she stuck. And all through the night we could hear her calling to us, saying, help, help, help. And it was heartbreaking to listen to her. But what could we do? Not a thing until the next day when the paint had dried. And then, of course, we all rushed over to her and calmed her down and gave her some food. Believe it or not, she lived for 6 months like that, upside down on the ceiling, with her legs stuck permanently in the paint. She really did. We fed her every day. We brought her fresh flies straight from the web. But then, on the 26th of April last, Aunt Sponge, the late Aunt Sponge, I mean, happened to glance up at the ceiling, and she spotted her. A spider, she cried. A disgusting spider. Quick, fetch me the mop with the long handle. And then, oh, it was so awful, I can't bear to think of it.
Miss Spider wiped away a tear and looked sadly at the centipede.
Your poor thing, she murmured. I do feel sorry for you.
It'll never come off, the earthworm said brightly. Our centipede will never move again. He will turn into a statue, and we shall be able to put him in the middle of the lawn with a bird bath on top of his head.
We could try peeling him like a banana, the old green grasshopper suggested.
Or rubbing him with sandpaper, the ladybird said.
Now if he stuck out his tongue, the earthworm said,
smiling a little for perhaps the first time in his life.
If he stuck it out really far, then we could all catch hold of it and start pulling, and if we pulled hard enough, we could turn him inside out, and he would have a new skin.
There was a pause while the others considered this interesting proposal.
I think, James said slowly, I think that the best thing to do...
Then he stopped.
"What was that?"
he asked quickly.
"I heard a voice. I heard someone shouting."
30. They all raise their heads, listening.
Shh! There it is again.
But the voice was too far away for them to hear what it was saying.
"It's a cloud man,"
Miss Spider cried.
"I just know it's a cloud man. They're after us again."
"It came from above,"
the earthworm said. And automatically everybody looked upward. Everybody except the centipede, who couldn't move.
"Ouch!"
they said.
"Help! Mercy! We're going to catch it this time!"
For what they now saw, swirling and twisting directly over their heads, was an immense black cloud. A terrible, dangerous, thundery-looking thing that began to rumble and roar even as they were staring at it. And then, from high up on top of the cloud, the faraway voice came down to them once again, this time very loud and clear.
"On with the faucets!"
it shouted.
"On with the faucets! On with the faucets!"
3 seconds later, the hole underneath of the cloud seemed to split and burst open like a paper bag, and then out came the water. They saw it coming. It was quite easy to see, because it wasn't just raindrops. It wasn't raindrops at all. It was a great, solid mass of water that might have been a lake or a whole ocean dropping out of the sky on top of them, and down it came. Down and down and down, crashing first onto the seagulls and then onto the peach itself, while the poor travellers shrieked with fear and groped around frantically for something to catch hold of. The peach stem, the silk strings, anything they could find. And all the time, the water came pouring and roaring down upon them, bouncing and smashing and sloshing and slashing and swashing and swirling and surging and whirling and gurgling and gushing and rushing and rushing, and it was like being pinned down underneath the biggest waterfall in the world and not being able to get out. They couldn't speak. They couldn't see. They couldn't breathe. And James Henry Trotter, holding on madly to one of the silk strings above the peach stem, told himself that this must surely be the end of everything at last. But then, just as suddenly as it had started, the deluge stopped. They were out of it, and it was all over. The wonderful seagulls had flown right through it and had come out safely on the other side. Once again, the giant peach was sailing peacefully through the mysterious moonlit sky.
"I'm drowned,"
gasped the old green grasshopper, spitting out water by the pint.
"It's gone right through my skin,"
the earthworm groaned.
"I always thought my skin was waterproof, but it isn't, and now I'm full of rain."
"Look at me! Look at me!"
shouted the centipede excitedly.
"It's washed me clean! The paint's all gone! I can move again!"
"That is the worst news I've had in a long time,"
the earthworm said. The centipede was dancing around the deck and turning somersaults in the air and singing at the top of his voice.
"Oh, hooray for the storm and the rain. I can move, I don't feel any pain. And now I'm a pest. I'm the biggest and best, the most marvellous pest once again."
"Oh, do shut up,"
the old green grasshopper said.
"Look at me,"
cried the centipede.
"Look at me! I am freed, I am freed! Not a scratch, nor a bruise, nor a bleed. To his grave, this fine gent, they all thought they had sent, and I very near went, oh, I very near went, but they sent quite the wrong centipede."
31.
"How fast we are going all of a sudden," the ladybird said. "I wonder why."
"I don't think the seagulls like this place any better than we do," James answered. "I imagine they want to get out of it as soon as they can. They got a bad fright in that storm we've just been through. Faster and faster flew the seagulls, skimming across the sky at a tremendous pace, with the peach trailing out behind them. Cloud after cloud went by on either side, all of them ghostly white in the moonlight. And several more times during the night, the travellers caught glimpses of cloud men moving around on the tops of these clouds, working their sinister magic upon the world below. Once they passed a snow machine in operation, with the cloud men turning the handle and a blizzard of snowflakes blowing out of the great funnel above. They saw the huge drums that were used for making thunder, and the cloud men beating them furiously with long hammers. They saw the frost factories and the wind producers and the places where cyclones and tornadoes were manufactured and sent spinning down towards the earth. And once, deep in the hollow of a large billowy cloud, they spotted something that could only have been a cloud men's city. There were caves everywhere running into the cloud, and at the entrances to the caves, the cloud men's wives were crouching over little stoves with frying pans in their hands, frying snowballs for their husbands' suppers. And hundreds of cloud men's children were frisking about all over the place and shrieking with laughter and sliding down the billows of the cloud on toboggans. An hour later, just before dawn, the travellers heard a soft, whooshing noise above their heads, and they glanced up and saw an immense, grey, bat-like creature swooping down towards them out of the dark. It circled round and round the peach, flapping its great wings slowly in the moonlight and staring at the travellers. Then it uttered a series of long, deep, melancholy cries and flew off again into the night.
"Oh, I do wish the morning would come," Miss Spider said, shivering all over.
"It won't be long now," James answered. "Look, it's getting lighter over there already." They all sat in silence, watching the sun as it came up slowly over the rim of the horizon for a new day. 32. And when full daylight came at last, they all got to their feet and stretched their poor, cramped bodies. And then the centipede, who always seemed to see things first, shouted,
"Look, there's land below!"
"He's right," they cried, running to the edge of the peach and peering over.
"Hooray! Hooray!"
"It looks like streets and houses. But how enormous it all is." A vast city, glistening in the early morning sunshine, lay spread out 3,000 feet below them. At that height, the cars were like little beetles crawling along the streets, and people walking on the pavements looked no larger than tiny grains of soot.
"But what tremendous tall buildings!" exclaimed the ladybird. "I've never seen anything like them before in England. Which town do you think it is?"
"This couldn't possibly be England," said the old green grasshopper.
"Then where is it?" asked Miss Spider.
"You know what those buildings are," shouted James, jumping up and down with excitement. "Those are skyscrapers. So this must be America. And that, my friends, means that we have crossed the Atlantic Ocean overnight."
"You don't mean it," they cried. "It's not possible.
It's incredible. It's unbelievable."
"Oh, I've always dreamed of going to America," cried the centipede.
"I had a friend once who..."
"Be quiet," said the earthworm. "Who cares about your friend? The thing we've got to think about now is how on earth are we going to get down to earth?"
"Ask James," said the ladybird.
"I don't think that should be so very difficult," James told them. "All we have to do is to cut loose a few seagulls, not too many, mind you, but just enough so that the others can't quite keep us up in the air. Then down we shall go, slowly and gently, until we reach the ground. Centipede,
will bite through the strings for us, one at a time.
33. Far below them, in the city of New York, something like pandemonium was breaking out. A great round ball as big as a house had been sighted hovering high up in the sky over the very centre of Manhattan. And the cry had gone up that it was an enormous bomb sent over by another country to blow the whole city to smithereens. Air raid sirens began wailing in every section. All radio and television programs were interrupted with announcements that the population must go down into their cellars immediately. 1 million people walking in the streets on their way to work looked up into the sky and saw the monster hovering above them and started running for the nearest subway entrance to take cover. Generals grabbed hold of telephones and shouted orders to everyone they could think of. The mayor of New York called up the president of the United States down in Washington, D.C. to ask him for help. And the president, who at that moment was having breakfast in his pajamas, quickly pushed away his half-finished plate of sugar crisps and started pressing buttons right and left to summon his admirals and his generals. And all the way across the vast stretch of America, in all the 50 states, from Alaska to Florida, from Pennsylvania to Hawaii, the alarm was sounded and the word went out that the biggest bomb in the history of the world was hovering over New York City and that at any moment it might go off. 34.
Come on, centipede! Bite through the first string! James ordered. The centipede took one of the silk strings between his teeth and bit through it. And once again, but not with an angry cloud man dangling from the end of the string this time, a single seagull came away from the rest of the flock and went flying off on its own. "Bite another," James ordered. The centipede bit through another string.
"Why aren't we sinking?"
"We are sinking."
"No, we're not."
"Don't forget, the peach is a lot lighter now than when we started out," James told them. "It lost an awful lot of juice when all those hailstones hit it in the night."
"Cut away two more seagulls, centipede."
"Ah, that's better.
Here we go.
Now we really are sinking."
"Yes, this is perfect. Don't bite any more, centipede, or we'll sink too fast."
Gently does it. Slowly, the great peach began losing height, and the buildings and streets down below began coming closer and closer.
"Do you think we'll get all our pictures in the papers when we get down?" the ladybird asked.
"My goodness, I've forgotten to polish my boots," the centipede said.
"Everyone must help me to polish my boots before we arrive."
"Oh, for heaven's sake," said the earthworm. "Can't you ever stop thinking about..."
But he never finished his sentence, for suddenly...
Whoosh!
And they looked up and saw a huge four-engined plane come shooting out of a nearby cloud and go whizzing past them, not more than 20 feet over their heads. This was actually the regular early morning passenger plane coming into New York from Chicago. And as it went by, it sliced right through every single one of the silken strings. And immediately the seagulls broke away and the enormous peach, having nothing to hold it up in the air any longer, went tumbling down towards the earth like a lump of lead.
"Help!"
cried the centipede.
"Save us!"
cried Miss Spider.
"We are lost!"
cried the ladybird.
"This is the end!" cried the old green grasshopper.
"James!"
cried the earthworm.
"Do something, James! Quickly do something!"
"I can't!" cried James.
"I'm sorry! Goodbye! Shut your eyes, everybody! It won't be long now!"
35. Round and round and upside down went the peach as it plummeted towards the earth. And they were all clinging desperately to the stem to save themselves from being flung into space. faster and faster it fell, down and down and down, racing closer and closer to the houses and streets below, where it would surely smash into a million pieces when it hit. And all the way along Fifth Avenue and Madison Avenue and along all the other streets in the city, people who had not yet reached the underground shelters looked up and saw it coming. And they stopped running and stood there staring in a sort of stupor at what they thought was the biggest bomb in all the world falling out of the sky onto their heads. A few women screamed. Others knelt down on the sidewalks and began praying aloud. Strong men turned to one another and said things like, "I guess this is it, Joe," and, "Goodbye, everybody, goodbye." And for the next 30 seconds, the whole city held its breath, waiting for the end to come.
"Goodbye, Ladybird,"
gasped James, clinging to the stem of the falling peach.
"Goodbye, Centipede. Goodbye, everybody."
There were only a few seconds to go now, and it looked as though they were going to fall right in among all the tallest buildings. James could see the skyscrapers rushing up to meet them at the most awful speed, and most of them had square, flat tops. But the very tallest of them had a top that tapered off into a long, sharp point, like an enormous silver needle sticking up into the sky. And it was precisely onto the top of this needle that the peach fell. There was a squelch. The needle went in deep. And suddenly, there was the giant peach, caught and spiked upon the very pinnacle of the Empire State Building. 37. It was really an amazing sight. And in 2 or 3 minutes, as soon as the people below realized that this now couldn't possibly be a bomb, they came pouring out of the shelters and the subways to gape at the marvel. The streets for half a mile around the building were jammed with men and women. And when the word spread that there were actually living things moving about on the top of the great round ball, then everyone went wild with excitement.
"It's a flying saucer,"
they shouted.
"They're from outer space. They are men from Mars.
Or maybe they came from the moon." And a man who had a pair of binoculars to his eyes said,
"They look pretty peculiar to me, I'll tell you that."
Police cars and fire engines came screaming in from all over the city and pulled up outside the Empire State Building. 200 firemen and 600 policemen swarmed into the building and went up in the elevators as high as they could go. Then they poured out onto the observation roof, which is the place where tourists stand, just at the bottom of the big spike. All the policemen were holding their guns at the ready with their fingers on the triggers, and the firemen were clutching their hatchets. But from where they stood, almost directly underneath the peach, they couldn't actually see the travellers up on top.
"Ahoy there!" shouted the chief of police. "Come out and show yourselves!"
Suddenly, the great brown head of the centipede appeared over the side of the peach. His black eyes, as large and round as two marbles, glared down at the policemen and the firemen below. Then his monstrous ugly face broke into a wide grin. The policemen and the firemen all started shouting at once.
"Look out!"
they cried.
"It's a dragon!"
"It's not a dragon, it's a wampus!"
"It's a gorgon!"
"It's a sea serpent!"
"It's a brock!"
"It's a manticore!"
3 firemen and 5 policemen fainted and had to be carried away.
"It's a snozzwanger,"
cried the chief of police.
"It's a wangdoodle,"
yelled the head of the fire department. The centipede kept on grinning. He seemed to be enjoying enormously the commotion that he was causing.
"Now see here,"
shouted the chief of police.
cupping his hands to his mouth.
You listen to me. I want you to tell me exactly